Continue with your scriptures open to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. We continue with our series as we study through the book of 2 Corinthians, chapters 8 and 9. This series is entitled Christian Generosity. As we begin, I just want to mention it's good to have a few returning folks with us this morning. Chuck Campbell's down here on the front row. He's got this hair down here. And he says, Rich, I just wanted to look like you. And I says, I shaved mine because I wanted to look like you. So good to have Chuck and his daughter Shannon with us today. And Steve and Sarah Spigner are back with us all the way up from Athens, Georgia. Down there where it's hot and they add more syllables to their words than we do. But great to have them with us and looking forward to continued fellowship through the day. In this series in 2 Corinthians 8, we have looked at, and it's Christian liberality, liberality that abounds, and also liberality that is from abiding. But today we're going to look at liberality that approves. Liberality that approves. Meaning that that wisdom and discernment are part of good stewardship, both on the administrative side and on the giving side. We are to be good stewards of what God has entrusted to us. And as we've discussed in our care group Sunday school, stewardship is not just about giving. Stewardship is understanding that all that I have, all the resources that I have, are entrusted to me by God. Therefore, life itself is a stewardship. It is God's, and the things that I have are entrusted to me by Him to bring Him glory. So when we understand that, that helps us understand that the things that I do with my money is just a part of the broader picture of stewardship. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, the Apostle Paul was writing to Timothy on the issue of qualifications for bishops, for leadership in the church. And the person who is to be a leader in the church is the person who is not to be given to what the King James calls filthy lucre. That just has some good nuances to it, doesn't it? Filthy lucre. What that means is that a person who is going to be in leadership in the church is a person who should not be greedy for money. Now, some things don't change over time. The well-publicized efforts of religious leaders who are hucksters with questionable ethics and high-pressure tactics make some pastors hesitant to discuss finances. Well, that's one of the liberties of a systematic exposition of the Scriptures. We're just going through 2 Corinthians. And when we get to 2 Corinthians chapter 8, the subject matter is finances, particularly with giving. And that's why we call it Christian generosity. But there are many principles that we can glean from this. Paul did not hesitate to talk about money. Paul was the founder of the Corinthian church. And he knew that if he, as the apostle, as the founder of the church, if he exhorted Christians to present themselves to Christ for his use, then that includes asking them to present their funds as well. Paul also understood that he had to be sensitive to the wisest use and management of material goods as good stewards, and not providing any avenue to discredit the gospel of Christ through the administration and use of funds. He was very sensitive to that, and we find that in this text before us today. So Paul, who was expecting this gift, this contribution, this collection to be a considerably large collection, because he was collecting from many churches, not just the Corinthian church. As we look in Romans, he was collecting from the churches in Macedonia and the churches in Achaia, which included the Corinthian church. He expected this to be quite a large contribution. If you remember, the background information here is that the Christians in Jerusalem, who were Jews, were being ostracized by their fellow countrymen because now they had become followers of Christ. And so they considered them to be non-Jewish anymore, and they were cutting them off. And they were running out of resources. And Paul, wanting to bring a sense of unity in the church, wanted the Gentile Christians to be generous and show their love for the Jewish Christians, so that they recognized that they were all part of one body, not a separate Jewish and separate Gentile church. And so he wanted to bring that unity. And he was expecting this to be a large collection. And he knew in that case that because it would be a large collection, that it would open the administrators, those who were handling the funds, it would open them up to suspicion and questions. And so the whole process would not be without safeguards. And we see them in this text here today. So in today's message, the title is Liberality That Approves. From this, we get six principles for responsible giving. And these would be both on the administrative side and on the giving side. The first one we want to discuss today is the aim of giving, or the aim of collecting offerings. The aim of it. We need to remember that in this, the substance of this is specifically Christian generosity. It's not just generosity in general, it is Christian generosity. And as Paul was calling on the church to give of their funds to help their brothers and sisters, we must understand that Christian generosity is that which promotes God and God's agenda and God's purposes and God Himself. We should be very careful that we do not give to a program or a cause that is promoting a particular man. The church is not about that. The church does not ask for funds. Christian ministry should not ask for funds to promote a particular man. And Paul was very careful about it, that in this text we find he was not promoting himself, the delegates who were entrusted with the task of administrating the fund. It was not about promoting themselves. It was not about their personal gain. It was about promoting God, about pointing to Jesus Christ. And when we speak of the highest aim to be that of glorifying God and glorifying Christ, what that means is to glorify God means to point to Him. When I'm pointing to Him, I want to bring your attention to God. And therefore, when I give, when I am called upon to give, when I do that, I do so with the ultimate aim and objective of pointing you and others to God. And that needs to be the aim of Christian generosity. So ultimately, it is about the gospel of grace. Because God is a gracious God. He is a giver. He has given us of Himself, His indescribable gift in the Lord Jesus Christ. And therefore, because He has given, we therefore give out of generosity, out of gratitude. And that takes us back then to verse 9, once again, the gospel. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though He was rich, yet for your sakes He became poor, that you through His poverty might become rich. That then becomes the foundation of our generosity. It becomes the fountainhead of the outflow of our generosity and love as generous Christian generosity. The second principle is that of administration. Paul said, as far as his aim for the glory of the Lord, look with me specifically at verse 19. He said at the end of verse 19, which is administered by us to the glory of the Lord Himself. He says so again in verse 20. Now, in that administration, the second principle is administration. And we are administering it to the glory of the Lord. So Paul, accountable himself to God's purposes. Interesting, this word administered by us. That word administered is the word diakoneo, from which we get our word deacon, which means to serve or to take care of. And that's what deacons do. And I would have you know, as pastor of the church here for over 10 years now, that the deacons of this church in its history have been of great reputation and have done a masterful job of administrating and taking care of the funds of Grace Bible Church. I'm hands off when it comes to that. It's their responsibility, and they do a good job of taking care of that with great integrity, oversight, and accountability. When Paul mentioned of the administration of this collection for the Christians in Jerusalem, he said there has to be in place the right channels and the right oversight for these funds. Specifically in this case, there was apostolic oversight. Paul himself being the chief overseer of what was going on, but he was not the one himself handling the funds. He said in the administration there needs to be order, there needs to be proper accounting and handling. And that is true for any way that I should give. I give to the church, if I give to another organization, in responsible giving, I need to make sure that there is proper accountability for that. And that there are the right channels and oversight for that so that I know what the money is doing. And so that brings up the question then, who will actually be handling these funds? In the administration of this large collection for the poor Christians in Jerusalem, who's going to be handling these funds? Well, that brings us to the third principle, and that's the principle of approval. There is a delegation of three that we find in this paragraph, 2 Corinthians chapter 8. There was a delegation of three who were approved and entrusted with the administration of this large collection. The first one is Titus. We find him in verse 16, "Thanks be to God who puts the same earnest care for you into the heart of Titus." Look with me once again down at verse 23. "If anyone inquires about Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker concerning you." And so Titus is the first one in the delegation. He is a partner and a fellow worker with the Apostle Paul. Paul was the founder of the church, so he was a trusted individual. But it also becomes clear that Titus was a person who was not wanting to seek his own glory, but he was seeking the Lord's glory. The same earnest care for you into the heart of Titus. Titus was a genuinely caring person. He wasn't building himself up. His ministry was all about the Corinthians and ministering to them to the glory of God. And therefore, he was one who was entrusted with the task of administrating this large collection. The second one we find in verse 18. "And we have sent with him," that's with Titus, "we've sent with him the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches." Interesting, Paul simply refers to him as the brother. You have to understand that this letter was written by Paul to the church and it was delivered by Titus. So when the church gets there, the delegation of three had already been there. And personally, in real life and time, in space and time and history, they were introduced as persons to the church. And then Titus gives them the church and then the letter was read publicly to the church. And so everyone knew who this brother was. Paul didn't name him for some reason, but everyone knew who he was. And it's interesting that he points out that this brother with us, with this gift, verse 18, "sent with him the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches." He was affirmed by the congregations, his praise, that is his public reputation of the churches, that he is chosen by the churches, and his public reputation is that he is faithful in the gospel of Christ, in the proclamation of the gospel of Christ. And that is the focus of his ministry. And he's been very faithful in that. And so he is chosen by the churches to travel with us. And that's a very important point. This is not another person that was just handpicked by Paul. This person was chosen by the churches to travel with him. So there is a broad scope of approval for this individual who is entrusted with the administration of this collection. The third person in this delegation, then we find down in verse 22. "And we have sent with them," that's Titus and the brother, and here Paul goes again, "our brother." So we have Titus, the brother, and our brother. These three guys in the delegation. He didn't name him, but the Corinthians knew of whom he spoke because they had already been introduced to him. So our brother was probably one that Paul and the Corinthians knew in common. But this was a person, look what he says about him. We've sent with them our brother, whom we have often proved diligent in many things, but now much more diligent because of the great confidence which we have in you. What is Paul saying about him? This man has a humble life of known service, and he has proved diligent in many things. He has been entrusted with many responsibilities, small and great, and in every one of them, he has proved faithful and diligent. You give a task to this man, and he does it. There are several people like that in this church, where you give them, you ask them to do something, and you know that you never have to ask them again, because they'll get it done. And this is this sort of person. He proved diligent in many things. He had a pattern of faithfulness. So you have these three. Titus, a partner and fellow worker with the apostle who seeks the Lord's glory. You have the brother who is affirmed by the congregations, chosen by the churches to travel with us. And then we have our brother who had a life of known service, who proved diligent in many things with a pattern of faithfulness. And that was the delegation entrusted with the task of the administration of this large gift, this large collection for the Christians in Jerusalem. Now, principle number four then takes us to the principle is accountability. The principle of accountability. He says in verse 19 that he is which is administered by us to the glory of the Lord and to show your ready mind. Verse 20, avoiding this, that anyone should blame us in this lavish gift which is administered by us. When he says avoiding, the implication there is that Paul made sure that safeguards were in place so that there was no room for anyone to bring blame against those who were entrusted with the handling of the funds. It was all out in the open. Paul knew that it was very important to keep a good reputation through wise stewardship so as not to bring any reproach to the gospel of Christ. And so he says, providing, verse 21, providing honorable things not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. Here is clear-cut accountability. Providing honorable things. Not just in the sight of the Lord. Why is that? Is not God Himself the ultimate accountability for us? Well, indeed He is. And we will give account of all before Him in the end. But meanwhile, it can be claimed dubiously that one is doing ministry and yet being dishonest or being greedy. And that has happened many times through the history of the church. And Paul says, we're not going to let anyone have that perception of what we're doing here. It's not about us. It's not about our greed. We're not in the business of living off of other people's money. This is for the Christians in Jerusalem. This collection is to glorify God, to show the love of Christ. And that's what this is about. And we're not going to give anyone opportunity to bring fault or an accusation against us. But providing things honorable in the sight of men. What is that? That is, if you would, in the financial sense, peer review. It's accountability at the human level so that others looking in can see and they can observe and they can be sure that everything is above board here. There is nothing happening under the table. There are no dishonest dealings here. Unfortunately, those safeguards are very, very necessary. And many of you have given charitable to many things. But I recall speaking with Dr. Jim Burse, who is one of our missionaries who established Haiti Bible Institute. I was down there last October, will be again this October. And you still see the devastation down there from the earthquake several years ago now. And there are many charitable organizations there in Haiti. And what Jim pointed out to me is that when this earthquake happened and there was just a flood of charitable donation that came down to Haiti, all of a sudden where these organizations that generally have reputable reputation, to have good reputations, reputations of integrity. In these chapters here, with the level of corruption that there was in this area, he said when these donations started coming in from America and around the world to Haiti, all of a sudden, within a couple of weeks, in the parking lots where these charitable donations are, where these organizations are, all of a sudden you see the parking lots lined with brand new SUVs. And these were organizations that were not willing to be accountable for the funds that were given. And Jim Burse recognized that as we practiced, he said, if the people in Haiti who really need the funds, if they're going to get the money, someone has to take it down to them in person and give it to them directly. And that's what we did. We took a collection, and you were generous, and we sent it down with Jim, and he gave it to those who genuinely needed the help. That's a necessary accountability. Otherwise, we would be unwise stewards of what God has entrusted to us. There has to be that accountability, and with that accountability, the fifth principle is that there has to be answers. Why? Because people will ask questions. People will ask questions. And it's Paul is anticipating these questions. Look what he says in verse 23. If anyone inquires about Titus, middle of the verse, or if our brethren are inquired about, he's anticipating questions to be asked, whether it be from onlookers or from prospective contributors. Who are these guys who are going around and taking up the collection? What are they doing and what are they like and who are they? Because people are going to inquire. And Paul needed to make sure that everyone who was looking at this needed to understand that these guys were neither peddlers nor swindlers. They were not in this for themselves. This was a ministry to the glory of God. But if you look at this whole paragraph, and look through this with me, and through each one of these verses, the words that Paul uses, the tone that there is to this, look with me, for example, at verse 16. He speaks of earnest care. In verse 17, he speaks of an earnest appeal, of being diligent. In verse 18, he speaks of praise, that is the high reputation of this brother throughout all the churches. Verse 19, he speaks of their giving with a ready mind. He speaks of men chosen for the task. In verse 20, he refers to the intentionality of being blameless in their administration. In verse 21, he speaks of honorable things. In verse 22, those who proved, this one who has proved diligent in the confidence that they had in him. In verse 23, one who is a partner together with the apostle, and these men who were messengers of the churches. In all of this, in this whole paragraph, as Paul is bringing out these principles of honest and good and responsible stewardship, in all of this, there is no sense of any coercion of people having to give out of a sense of coercion. Paul said very clearly, I'm not giving you a command. I'm just presenting you with the opportunity. So there is no sense of coercion. There's no guilt. There are no pressure tactics. There's no peddling, or there are no dubious promises of seed giving so that you receive abundance in return. There's much of that that goes on today in churches and on TV. And all that does is feed the greed of the giver. There is none of that in this. There's no personal gain for those administrating the funds. It's not about them. And there's no mishandling of the funds. There's no negligence in the administration. But instead, through this, and these words that are used as we go through this paragraph, there is a high degree of willingness on the givers. There's a high degree of trust in the process. There's a high degree of accountability in the administration. But there's also a very high sense of godly purpose in it all as well. It's not about any particular man. It's not about getting on some bandwagon. It's about glorifying God. It's about the church manifesting its love. And that's what this is. And so these answers come forth in the words that Paul uses because he knows that people are going to be asking questions. And so in the end, that takes us to the sixth and final principle in this paragraph. And that is simply affirmation. Affirmation. Show the proof of your love. Show the proof of your love. Display the love for which I, Paul, bragged about you. Paul says to the Corinthians, I've been boasting about you to my brothers in the work that God is doing in your heart and mind. And now, in your generosity, under the gospel of grace, I invite you to show the proof of your love for God and for His people. And that's what it is. That's what Christian generosity is. Showing your love for God and for His people. He is calling the people to an eager, prompt generosity. He called them to abound in this grace. He knew that it would be a lavish gift because Paul was confident of the work that God was doing in the hearts and minds of the believers. Now let me add, please, another angle to this last principle, and that is the principle of affirmation. Because it is, Christian generosity is a proof of a Christian's love. Not only for God, but also for God's people. Because the Apostle John makes it very clear that if you love God, then you love His children. Think about that. If you love God, then you love His children. And oftentimes, one finds him or herself in need, or a family is in need. And there rises then the opportunity for other members of the family of God to show their love for you by helping you with that need. You need to allow them that opportunity to do that. Do not rob a fellow Christian of the blessing of giving and showing their love. Do not rob them of that by your own pride. Generosity, Christian generosity, is a proof of love. And I should not allow my pride, you should not allow your pride, to get in the way of those who want to come alongside and help you with their Christian generosity. A church and a ministry that operates this way, according to these principles, directs people's attention to Christ as a display of the gospel of grace. That was Paul's intent. Administered by us to the glory of God. The way we handle our funds points to God in His goodness, in His grace, in His holiness, in His truth. And so it ought to be with us in our giving and in our administration of these funds. Would you stand with me, please?